It's my pleasure now to introduce tonight's speaker, and this gentleman, in some ways for me, personifies what some of us find when we come to AA when we're new. We find people that look different than us, and people that that we're convinced don't have anything in common with us. And then a guy like this opens his mouth and he opens his heart, and I hope you find what I found. This guy's got a great story, and I relate to him very much. Please welcome Albert.
My name is Albert, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm also a proud product of Pine Recovery. That's where I got sober 20 years ago. And, you know, it's good to see George and Joan here because they're one of the first people that I've met when I got sober. Back in 84, I don't remember, it was probably during a blackout, but I remember I had just got out of prison and I was drunk, and I used to hang out in a Rosie right across the street from the RN market, because I was raised in Cutler all my life. But I hung out in a Rosie. I used to hang out right there across the street from the RN market, and I used to wear a trench coat in the summertime because that was the only store that had Thunderbird out on the rack. They didn't have it locked up. So I'd go to the store and boost my pockets with Thunderbird. And we used to drink that stuff hot in the summertime. And I remember this person that was with me at the time, why, I don't know, but she had been looking for me, and she told me that I needed to get some help. And I told her I could quit when I wanted. I just really didn't want it. You know what I mean? Well, she goes, I want you to go with me somewhere. And I said, I'm not going to go nowhere, man. I'm going to stay right here, right? And she says, no, really. You either get in the car or it's over, man. You know? And I said, look, if you go get me a six-pack of Budweiser and a pack of Camel Knock filters, I'll go wherever you want. You know what I mean? She says, you better not go nowhere. I'll be right back. So she went down to Caspian down the road, picked up some Budweiser and a pack of Camel Knock filters, and she pulled up and she said, get in. I said, well, give me the bag. She don't know the bag's in the car. And that's where you're going, man, in the car. And I had been drinking Thunderbird, hot Thunderbird, all day. And I remember I had got in the car and I had tried to down as many of these beers as I could. I go, where are we going? She said, we're going to go to Visalia. I want to introduce you to some people. And we went to, there was this shoe store on Main Street. And right upstairs, there was a meeting. And I didn't know that at the time. But we had went up there, we walked up these stairs and into the meeting, and they had this like one long table, man, and everybody was just sitting there. And I felt so awkward, so out of place, like, what did I get myself into, man? Why did I get in the car, right? And this meeting had started. I didn't know that it was an AA meeting. And I remember I looked at her and I said, I'm leaving. And she said, why? And I said, because I feel like everybody's looking at me, man. I was so drunk, you know. And plus, I had been slamming some heroin all day too, you know. And I told her, I feel like everyone's looking at me. She goes, they are, stupid. You're the only drunk one here, man. And I remember this lady named Robin from Ivanhoe. And she scared me, man. You know what I mean? And I left. I was walking out of the room, and when I started to go down the stairs, I fell down the rest of the way of the stairs. And I remember when I got outside and I was going to get in the car, I forgot Patsy had the keys, man. You know what I mean? So now I'm thinking, man, she better come down here because I'm not going to go back up there, you know? And I waited, and I waited. And she came out, and I grabbed the keys and said, we're out of here, man. Don't ever do this to me again. That's messed up, man, you know? And my car didn't want to start. And I'm getting mad now because I want to hurry up and get out of here, you know? And so my car didn't want to start. I always carried a screwdriver right there underneath my driver's seat. And I grabbed the screwdriver and I was going to get under the car to kick it over so it would start so I can get the heck out of there. But my car was too low and I couldn't get underneath, you know what I mean? And I thought, man, I'm really messed up now. And then I met some guy named David Grosso. And he started talking to me and he goes, hey, I know a place where there's a phone. And he took me through this field across the street into this house that I didn't know was Pine Recovery at the time. And back then, Pine was co-ed. And I was going to use the phone to call somebody to, I guess, come help me, I don't know, start the car or get me out of here, you know? And everybody kept looking at me and I'm thinking, man, this is a nut house, man. You know what I mean? I'm out of here, you know? But anyways, that was the first time I had ever went to an AA meeting. And at that time that I went, I honest to God didn't know that that's what it was. But she told me later, as we were going back to Cutter, she told me that I was an alcoholic and that I needed help. And anyways, it was May the 4th of 85. I ended up going back to the joint. And I remember after leaving Vacaville, I went to Jamestown. And I had like the fourth highest paying number on the yard for an inmate. I think I was getting like $37 a month. That was a lot of money, man. You know what I mean? And and one of my job was, I used to, the radio room in Jamestown was right above the sergeant's office. And my job was to make all the announcements on the yards. And so-and-so report to your job assignment, so-and-so report to classification or whatever. But on Saturdays, they had visiting in the morning. And then they would clear the visiting room. Later that evening, they had H&I, hospitals and institutions for recovering alcoholics that would go in there and take meetings to the alcoholics in prison. And I used to announce on Saturdays the AA meetings. Now, I didn't know anything about AA. I didn't really care, to be honest with you. I grew up in the Robert Blake Beretta era. And the theme song was, don't do the crime if you can't do the time. So I used to look down on people that were in prison and either went to church or went to AA or went to some sort of a self-help program, because I've always figured, because I've been doing time since I was a kid. I mean, I'd been in CYA, you know, done some jail time, and then this was my third time in the joint. And I couldn't understand why they were going to these meetings. I used to make fun of these people that were going to the meetings, you know what I mean? And then back in 87, back in 86, 87, I was in Susanville. And I was just getting ready to go home. But there were some problems in the yard. There was about like 80 of us that got sent to the hole. I was in lockdown for about 9 months. And I remember I got a little ducat through the window saying, Garcia, roll it up, you're going home in 48 hours. So me being the typical alcoholic that I am, I had been cooking some pruno, you know. And my homeboy was from Orosi. We were also cellmates in a two-man cell in the hole in the level 3 yard. And we had been cooking some pruno. And an alcoholic doesn't really need a reason to drink. I mean, but hey, I'm going home in 48 hours. So we tore open the bag, we filled up our tumblers, and we started drinking Pruno. And Pruno is just basically homemade brew, you know, and it's stronger than some of the stuff that you get behind the counter, man. But anyways, we were drinking, and we were on the second tier, and the CDC officer, Dean, come up to the second tier, and he told us, you guys are going to have to hold it down in there. You're getting a little too loud, because it echoes in there. And I remember saying something stupid like, well, what are you going to do, lock us up or what? You know what I mean? And then he said something, and then we said something, and then he said something back, and something came out of my mouth like, your mother, or something like that. So he said, okay, we'll see about that. Well, he took off, and we're laughing, ha-ha, you know, he ran, and he came back. He came back with what they called a goon squad. And a goon squad was 7 CDC officers, and they were wearing hard hats, bulletproof vests, steel-toed boots, and they had shields and clubs. Me and Nana were standing there, and all we had was boxers and shower shoes. I sobered up pretty quick, you know what I mean? But my homeboy Nana, he didn't. He said something stupid like, come on in, man. What? You know? And well, they came in, you know what I mean? And here I was, 48 hours to the house. My family had already made arrangements to drive from Cutler to Susanville to pick me up. And I picked up another year, you know, for assault on a correctional officer and for being intoxicated, you know. And the reason I'm telling you this is because that's the kind of drunk that I am. When things are going good, I'll find a way to mess it up. You know, that's the way it was all the time. I mean, here I am, 48 hours, you know, I'm out, I'm gone, and I'll find something stupid, you know, and that's what I allowed my drinking to do to me. You know, I came out, my parole officer gave me a card and said, you need to go to AA, and I did. And my first meeting was in Dinuba, and that's where I met my first sponsor, Dennis Ehoff. Dennis Ehoff passed away when I had 6 years sober. But Dennis, I was telling him that my parole officer wanted me to get into some sort of a program. He reached in his pocket and gave me a handful of change and says, there's a place in Visalia called Pine. Here's the number. Here's the money. Call them. And like a dummy, I did. You know what I mean? And then I even made the mistake of telling my parole officer about it. I didn't tell her because I wanted to go to Pine. I told her because I wanted to get her off my back so she'd leave me alone. She says, that's a great program. You should get in there. You know? And I went and did the interview thing, man. But I'm going to tell you, I really didn't want to go. I really didn't. And at that time, you know, I got kicked out of the house. I had to beg to go back to Mom's. You know what I mean? Here I was, a grown man, you know, begging, hey, I ain't got nowhere to sleep, man, you know? She says, you can stay under my roof as long as you call that program every day. And you're going to have to call them every day until you get in there. Because if you don't, you're out of here. I'll call your parole officer myself, man. And I said, all right. And I did. I called him every day, like for 3 days, you know what I mean? And then I didn't call him anymore. But I remember what happened was my mom had sent me to the store to go get some things, and I went to the store. When I came out of the store, there was a flyer on my windshield, and the flyer said 7 Kager in Selma. And it was a Friday. So I go home, I give my mom her stuff. She asked me, hey, did you call that program in Visalia today? And I said, oh, yeah, I called them earlier, man. She goes, I want to see you call them. What, I'm a liar? You don't believe me or what? I called them. She goes, I want to see you call them. Call them or leave. That's messed up. You know, it's a Friday night. there's a seven kegger in Selma, you know, and it's like, okay, I'll call him. It's Friday. It's almost four. They're out of there, you know. There's nobody in the morning. So I call. Some dude named Monty answers, man. And he goes, oh, Albert, yeah, you haven't called in a while. Yeah, I've been real busy, man. You know how it is, eh? And he says, well, you know what? Don't trip, man. Don't trip. We got a bed for you, man. And I'm like, what? And my mom's sitting right there looking at me, man. You know, with a cup full of coffee and an ashtray full of cigarette butts, man. You know what I mean? And she's giving me this look that only a mom can give you and get away with. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking, how am I going to blow off money without my mom knowing? You know what I mean? And I told him, hey, that's cool. That's cool, man. I'm glad to hear that. I'll be in there Monday. You know what I mean? He said, no, you got to come in right now, man. And I said, you know what? I got a lot of things I got to take care of, man. You know, I got to go out there and collect some money. People owe me money, man. He goes, well, you don't need no money here, man. And I says, you don't understand, dude. I don't have a thing to wear, man. All my clothes are dirty. I got to wash my laundry. He said, we got three washers, three dryers, man. And she's looking at me, and what did he say? You know? I told him, he said, look, you got till five. Actually, you got till a quarter to five. You ain't here. We're giving that bed to somebody else. You know, there comes a time in your life when you're going to have to grow up. If this is the time, show up. If it's not, then we'll still be here later. And I remember, man, I'm thinking about this seven kegger in Selma, and Pine ain't sounding too good right now. But I'm out in the backyard, and I'm washing my car, and I'm getting ready for this seven kegger. My niece, Maxine, she's like seven at the time. She's playing in the backyard at my mom's house, and she looks at me, and she goes, where are you going to, Albert? And I go, what makes you think I'm going anywhere, man? She goes, well, you're washing your car. You're getting ready to go somewhere. She goes, where are you going? And I told her, you know, mija, to be honest with you, I really don't know right now. But I know I'm going to go somewhere, man. I got to get out of here. And I didn't know where I was going because I didn't know if I was going to go to Selma or Pine. I didn't know. But she made the decision for me, man. She goes, dear Albert, will you promise me something? And I said, mija, I can't promise you nothing, man. My word's no good. But ask me something, man. If I can do it, I'll try. She said, promise me that wherever you go, that you won't go back to prison. And I looked at her and I said, why? And I thought she was going to say something like, you know, you're my uncle, I love you, I miss you when you're not here. But she didn't say that. She said, you know what, Theo Albert, every time you, Theo Mondo, Theo Carlos, every time you guys go to prison, man, Grandma gets mad, she yells at us, she makes us go on the bus, and we're in there for all day, and we got to stay in a hotel. Every time you guys mess up, we have to pay for it. And I knew then that I wasn't going to go to Selma. You know what I mean? I ended up going to Pine. But I'll tell you what happened. I'll tell you what happened. I was in Pine, and my 2 weeks restriction was up, and they told me you had a visitor. And nobody knows I'm here except my mom and my parole officer, and they ain't going to come see me. So I went out front to see who it was, and it was Dennis Ehoff, the guy that I had met in Dinuba. It was Dennis Ehoff, Trucker Johnny B. from Bakersfield, and Tom P. from Dinuba. And Dennis came over, and he had a paper bag. And in that paper bag, he had the Serenity Prayer on it. And two packs of Camel non-filters and a $5 bill. And so I figured, hey, do you want to sponsor me, man? You know what I mean? He said, I already am. I was just, you know, I didn't really need you to ask, but I already am your sponsor. And I said, cool. Dennis used to pick me up and take me to meetings, and I couldn't understand why. He used to take me to the Ramblers meeting in Bakersfield over there in Oildale. He used to take me to the Sicker Than Most group over there in Fresno, or Northeast Fellowship. He used to take me to Ivanhoe on Wednesday nights, where George and Joan and Robin and Ivan and Peggy and all these people that he hung out with were there, you know. And then he would take me to Reedy with Robert Buckley and all these people that he had met over the years in Kingsburg, and introduced me to Rusty. And And he was doing this, and I couldn't understand why. One day, I was reading this pamphlet, and it said questions and answers on sponsorship. And it said what a sponsor was. And it said that a sponsor wasn't a loan shark or a marriage counselor or anything like that. Basically, a sponsor was someone that was going to introduce you to the fellowship, show you what AA was all about, and guide you and walk you through the steps. And that's what Dennis did, because even when Dennis was sick and he couldn't pick me up, he used to send Robert Buckley from Reedley to drive in the fog to Visalia to pick me up, to take me to a meeting in Fresno, and made sure that I was back before curfew. And I knew these guys were gifted, and I knew these guys had something that I wanted, and I knew these guys were higher powered. And the reason I know this, because Robert Buckley was like 60-something years old back then, and this was like 20 years ago. But anyways, Robert, as we were driving in his truck in zero vision fog, he went through a stop sign out in the country. And I got scared, and I'm thinking, man, this dude's going to get us killed, man. You know what I mean? And I said, hey, Robert, you just went through a stop sign. And he laughed. He says, I know. He says, but don't worry about it. I said the serenity prayer as we went through it, so we're all right, man. And I'm thinking, this dude's crazy, man. You know? I was reading the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in there, there's a line where it says, remember that in the beginning, we were willing to go to any lengths for our sobriety. Remember that in the beginning, we were willing to go to any lengths for our sobriety. And then it skips down a little bit, and then there's another line where it says, even if it means going to jail. And I'm thinking, this sucks, because I came here to get my parole officer off my back. I came here to get Judge Kim off my back. I came here because I'm tired of going to jail, and I don't go to jail. People like me go to prison, you know, and I don't want to do that no more. And when I read that, I started thinking, why am I here? I mean, I should leave, right? So, but I didn't. I had a problem with people in AA because people used to hug me and tell me stuff like, I love you. And I didn't understand that because guys don't tell guys I love you, you know. And I had a problem with that. And I had asked Dennis one day, because see, I got sober in the third edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Dennis got sober in the first edition. His sponsor, Ivan, got sober in the first edition. So there was three editions of big books, but mine didn't have the paradox of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the second edition did. And I had asked Dennis, why all these dudes want to hug me, man? Why all these dudes come to AA? We love you, man. And I go, what's up with these people, man? And he says, Albert, he goes, it's the fellowship. He says, and we're going to love you until you can learn how to love yourself. And I said, well, how do you love yourself? And he showed me his book. His book was like Looper's book, highlighted, man, pages marked and everything. You know what I mean? I mean, and he was one of those, man, that the big book says it, I believe it, and that settles it, man. But he showed me the four paradoxes of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would have never learned that if it wouldn't have been for my sponsor, because a third edition didn't have it. And the four paradoxes of Alcoholics Anonymous was that, one, I had to surrender to win. I had to suffer to heal, I had to die to live, and then I had to give it away to keep it. And what he was telling me is that I had to die, the person that I created in my addiction, the person that I became when I was a drunk, had to die so that the person my higher power intended me to be could come back to life. And I had never heard that explained to me like that. He says, Albert, you got to learn how to love yourself. You hate you. And that's why you do what you do to you. You know, and when you can learn how to love yourself, and then you'll stop hurting yourself and those that you claim to love. And I said, well, how do I do that? I mean, how do I do that? And he says, it's simple. He says, all you got to do is just look in the mirror, man. Look in the mirror and tell yourself every single day, Albert, I love you. And you say that until one day you actually mean it. You know what I mean? And I'm like, all right. And I did that. I went back to Pine. I went into the restroom, and I looked in the mirror, and I said to myself, I said, Albert, I love you. And then I realized, this is stupid. And I didn't shut the bathroom door. And the guys in Animal House probably heard me and think there's something wrong with me. And I'm supposed to be a hardcore ex-convict. How am I going to clean this one up, right? So, thank God nobody heard me or saw me, right? But I did that. I did that every day. But I made sure I shut the doors, you know what I mean? And I remember I was going to court. Bill Jorgensen from Pine, who was the director back then, had wrote me a letter. My sister, who was still strung out, you know, and living in Parlier, went from Parlier to Visalia to pick me up from the January house and was taking me to court. And she goes, "You ready?" And I said, "Yeah, hold on, man. I got to do something real quick." And I ran into the house and I went into the restroom and I shut the door and I looked in the mirror and I said, "Albert, I love you, man." And whatever. And I left, right? Judge Kim gave me a year county time. And I couldn't understand because I had not done county time in a long time, you know. And I thought, dang, this is cool because I'm only going to do 8 months out of this. You know what I mean? Dennis introduced me to David Looper. And these people were coming out to the road camp bringing Alcoholics Anonymous to people like me that was introduced to it or even those that weren't. And the meetings got to keep going. It got to keep going for me. And then, I'll never forget, man, Sergeant Hawkins called me into the office and says, "Hey, Garcia, man, you've been here a couple of months and you ain't been in trouble, man. What's up with that?" And kind of arrogant, cocky, and self-righteous, I looked at him and said, "Hey, check it out, Hawkins. This is my last time here. I just came to say goodbye." You know what I mean? He said, "Whatever, man." And he goes, "The reason that I called you, man, is because we need a trustee out there in Pixley. Somebody that, you know, knows how to roll fingers on paper and book people in." And I said, "I'm overqualified, man." He said, "Yeah, I figured you'd say that. How long would it take you to pack you up and get you out of here?" I said, "Give me 2 pillowcases in about 15 minutes, man. I got a lot of stuff, you know what I mean?" So he did. We go to Pixley, man. And there's some guy there, you know, named Brian. And I said, "What's this?" He says, "Oh, this is a two-man cell. There's two of them." I go, "I don't do two-man cells. I do single cell or I don't do it at all, man." So they rolled that other guy up, took him back to road camp, and I got to stay at Pixley all by myself. You know what I mean? And they had an AA meeting there every Tuesday night right there in the courthouse. Every Tuesday night. And that's where I got to meet Rockin' Mike and a lot of people were coming to this meeting, you know, and Alan, you know, from Porterville. And I just started meeting all these people, you know, Eli from Early Martin, all these people in AA, you know, and they let me go to that meeting, man. You know what I mean? I got to go to that meeting every Tuesday. But I'll never forget the month of April because I was my first year sober. My first year sober, man. My sponsor, Dennis, had showed up. And he brought his sponsor, Ivan, and Ivan's wife, Peggy, with them. Rockin' Mike showed up. He had a crush on my mom. But anyways, whatever gets you there, right? And Rockin' Mike showed up, man. 32 members of Alcoholics Anonymous showed up to celebrate my first birthday with me. My mother showed up with my sister, who was a resident at New Visions at the time. Rick Thompson from Pine showed up with a resident from Pine to bring me my one-year chip. And there's 32 people in Alcoholics Anonymous that came from Reedley, came from New London, came from Traver, came from Terrabella, you know, came from Dinuba, Visalia, to celebrate my birthday with me. And no one has ever done that before. And I remember I was sitting there, man, and what threw me off was my mom. She was crying. And I couldn't understand why she was crying, man. And I'm thinking, dang, what do I do now? You know what I mean? And I looked at her and I said, "Hey, old lady, why are you crying, man? I mean," and she says, "I'm happy for you, mijo." I had never seen tears of joy. I had seen tears, you know, my mom cried. She had 7 kids. And she saw 4 of us go before her, plus my dad. You know, and I was there when my brother Carlos got killed in Folsom. And she got the phone call, and I remember she cried for days. And I remember when my sister died in a car accident trying to outrun a highway patrol in a high-pursuit chase, and my mom got the call that my sister's head got cut off. And I remember the calls that my mom had gotten, you know, and I remember the letter, you know, when I wrote her, and I was in Represa, California, Folsom, you know, and that's where my uncle Ben got killed and my brother Carlos got killed, and my mom thought that maybe I would get killed, you know. And she was crying, man. And, you know, it was my first year sober. And I remember the meeting was over, man, and everybody had to go. And Deputy Watson comes up and says, "Hey, Albert, man, you're going to have to go back to your cell, man." And I said, "All right." So I got the leftover cake, the punch, you know, and all the birthday cards. And I got four chips. My mom gave me a chip. The secretary of that meeting gave me a chip. My sponsor, Dennis Ehoff, gave me a chip. And staff from Pine Recovery and a resident gave me a chip, you know. And I remember going back to my cell, and I was sitting there on my rack, and I was playing back in my head everything that had just happened. And I was reading this card, and it said, "We love you, keep coming back. We need you, keep coming back. We're proud of you, keep coming back. We knew you could do it, keep coming back." And I got off my rack, and I walked up to that little piece of stainless steel on the wall. It's all scratched up. It's supposed to be a mirror. And I looked in there, and I said to myself, I said, "Albert, I love you, and I'm proud of you." And I understood for the first time in my life what Dennis and Ivan and George and Joan and Robert and Trucker Johnny B and all these people had been telling me. I understood for the first time in my life that we're going to love you until you learn how to love yourself. And I'm not saying that my family didn't love me. They just never told me they did. And it was hard to hear somebody, especially someone that didn't know me, to say, "I love you." And it felt kind of good, you know what I mean? That's why I always say that I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to know one prayer before I ever got sober, and that prayer went something like this. You may have heard it. "God, if you get me out of this, I promise." You know what I mean? And then I met Mud from Oildale, and he used to say, "My name's Mud, and I'm an alcoholic. And I've been as high as a Georgia pine and as low as whale crap." And that's what Mudge used to always say, but he had a prayer. And Mudge's prayer said, he said, "I have two prayers, Albert. In the morning I get up and I say, 'God, whatever.' And then when I put my head on my pillow before I close my eyes, I say, 'God, enough.' And that's it." But Alcoholics Anonymous taught me the Serenity Prayer. And it wasn't so much the serenity to accept the things that I couldn't change and the courage to change the things I could, is that I had lacked the wisdom to know the difference. And people like David that went out to see me in AA, and people like Dennis and the ones that were here before me, and Mike, you know, they taught me the wisdom. And for that, I will be forever grateful. I have something that I want to give to somebody. Garth, this is your serenity prayer. Would you come up and get it, please? Something in me that I didn't know had existed within myself. And Bill's right. We're a group of people that would ordinarily not mix. And I remember, I think it was about two years ago, I was reading The Grapevine. And The Grapevine, there was a story about a punk rocker, man. And it talked about if this kid knocked on your door and he had a mohawk, you know, green and purple and different colors, and he asked for your daughter, you'd probably shut the door on him. You know what I mean? But if he walked into a room of Alcoholics Anonymous and said, my name is, and I'm an alcoholic, you'd probably shake his hand and give him a cup of coffee. And that's what you guys did to me. Thank you, and God bless all of you.
See, I told you.